On Radio Veritas, as we cross over now to Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office in Cape Town, cplo.org.za is their website, and we speak to Program Manager there, Advocate Mike Porthia. Advocate Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Kanya. I hope you can hear me.
Oh, yes, I can hear you clearly. And how's Cape Town?
The wind is back. Southeaster is back. So we're blowing this morning, but it's a nice day. It's bright and it's sunny and warming up. But getting windy.
Hey, when last did you have rain? As you say, now it's getting sunny.
Yeah, we actually had rain yesterday. Sunday, but it was drizzling most of yesterday morning.
Yes.
So this is a time of the year when you get winter one day, spring the next day, summer the day after that, and then back to winter for a couple of days. Very changeable.
Nice. And Joburg has been raining, hey?
Good.
Pretoria has been raining in terms of Matlanga Commission as well, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and it's going to rain more this week. Well, I suppose it's still early days. Last week we saw the National Commissioner more or less backing up what Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi said in the first few days of evidence. And indeed, we then saw the evidence of General Van Rooyen, I think her name was, Petronella Van Rooyen, the head of the legal department of SAPS, who was very forceful in saying that, as far as she was concerned, her interpretation of the law, and she's a very highly qualified lawyer, was that the police minister's decision to shut down the political killings task team was unlawful because it's an operational matter that should fall under the police themselves, under the office of the National Commissioner. It's not a policy or political matter falling under the office of the Minister of Police. She was very firm on that. So even though it is early days, it does seem that there is a fairly strong case being made out now to the effect that Senzo Mkhunu's interference or intervention may not have been lawful, and if that is the case, and we still have to hear from him, obviously, but if that is the case, then it raises the question of why he chose to interfere like that. But we have to hear a lot more evidence. Today, I believe the head of crime intelligence, Khumalo, is coming to give evidence, and people expect that he may drop one or two bombshells, name some names, and so on. So it's going to be an interesting week.
Oh, yes, we look and see how this is all going to work out. And, of course, former President Mbeki praising Mkhwanazi for this, for speaking out on crime, for speaking out on corruption, no matter who is involved.
Yeah, he did say that. I wondered if it was a wise thing to say at this stage. And when you have these big public inquiries, and don't forget we've got the Matlanga inquiry, but next week the ad hoc committee in Parliament starts its inquiry into the same allegations, basically.
Yes.
So when you have these big public inquiries going on, and they do take time, and they have to hear evidence from many different people, I'm not sure how wise it is for someone in Mbeki's high-profile position to, take such a public stance in support of one of the main players in this. What if it turns out? What if it turns out that Mkhwanazi is lying, or has some motives? He's trying to cover up something. If that should happen, I'm obviously not saying it will. Then Mbeki's words of support are going to look a little bit silly. So I would prefer that. It's fine for you and me and people who have no influence to chat about these things and speculate, but everything that someone in Thabo Mbeki's position says is going to be taken very, very seriously and could even be seen as an attempt to influence. If he expresses his full faith and praise for Mkhwanazi, it might be seen as an attempt to influence those who have to make the final decisions and evaluations. So, yeah, on that score, perhaps he would have been wiser not to say those things.
I thought, he's just commenting on, should I say, prima facie as it is.
you know, that's the issue when you still have to hear from the other side. That's why, as I said, we have to hear from Mkhulu, we have to hear from the other deputy national commissioner who has been suspended. They have their story to tell, and we need to hear what they have to say before we make up our mind.
And of course, he says those who join the ANC for personal gain are actually a problem, have been a problem.
No, there, of course, he's on much firmer ground, and he's quite correct to point that out. And it was interesting that he went back into history, as he often does, and he, you know, compared and contrasted that generation of ANC leadership, the exiles, the Robben Islanders, etc. In other words, those who took part in and led the struggle years with the generation that came after, which has used ANC power as a route to self-advancement and self-enrichment. I mean, this is very obvious. We all know this. It's not a big revelation. But it is important that the elders of the movement keep drawing attention to this. Whether the ANC can change its tack and, you know, get back to those days when it was led by people who really did have the good of the country at heart, who were prepared to make personal sacrifices and who were not in it for their own advancement, I don't know. I don't know whether it can ever go back to that. But it's good that he reminds people about that. I would say, though, that a lot of the rot that has come to characterize the ANC in terms of corruption and factionalism and self-advancement and so on, you know, didn't start when Jacob Zuma became president. It started certainly before that, during Mbeki's two terms, possibly even in the Mandela presidency, when there were people then who were being fingered for corruption. There were people then who were being very credibly accused of corruption. We all remember how Mbeki shielded the then commissioner of police, who was under investigation by the Scorpions and by the National Prosecuting Authority, and how Mbeki squeezed out Vusi Pikoli, the head of the NPA, because he was investigating. I can't remember the name of the commissioner of police back then, but the one who eventually was sent to jail for 15 years for corruption. Mbeki shielded him. So, you know, the corruption and the self-advancement that Mbeki now criticizes within the ANC, he bears some responsibility, I think, for allowing it to take root in the first place.
So this is a lest we forget moment. He says, lest we forget the people who are in exile. You're saying, lest we forget what happened in your government.
Exactly. Yeah. Jackie Celebi was the name of the police commissioner I'm referring to back then.
And we know how that ended as well. So history is sort of repeating itself. We don't know. But just moving from the Advocate Mike to the pro-Palestine protests in Cape Town, your comment on this?
Well, it was a huge march. I don't know what the exact numbers were, but it was a very, very big march. If you look at any of the pictures, you'll see the streets were full of people. Demanding that our government take further action, including closing down the Israeli embassy in Pretoria. I don't know whether our government is moving in that direction, remembering that it's not just an ANC government, but a government of national unity. I suspect very much that some of the parties within the GNU, I think the DA, the Freedom Front, probably the IFP, and the Patriotic Alliance, for that matter, also, I think would all object to any move to close down the Israeli embassy. But nevertheless, it was an expression, certainly, of very popular anger directed against the state of Israel, the Israeli government, for what it is doing in Palestine. I think, though, perhaps a much more significant march that took place over the weekend as well was in Berlin, in Germany, which was also absolutely enormous. I think I read a figure of about 150,000 people
Sure.
taking part in that march. And the reason it's so significant is that Germany has been one of Israel's staunchest and strongest supporters through all of this. The German state as a whole has a very clear policy of supporting Israel, and it goes back to, of course, the Holocaust and the guilt that the German nation still carries for what happened to the Jews in the Second World War. And while a lot of other countries, as you know, in Europe have been recognizing a Palestinian state and starting to put more and more pressure on Israel, Germany has not yet begun to do that. Until quite recently, it was still supplying Israel with arms and ammunition and so on. So for German citizens in very, very large numbers to take to the streets in protest is a very interesting development. And that will put huge pressure, obviously, on the German government to start to change its stance on what is happening in Gaza and the West Bank. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch.
Interesting to watch, indeed. And then, on Eskom, I mean, these plans now to push ahead with more nuclear power stations. Your thoughts?
Well, it's something, again, that we need to watch very carefully. It's not, don't claim any particular expertise in this. And certainly, from the Catholic Church point of view, if we think of the advocacy work that we do as CPLO, we don't take a stance for or against nuclear energy. But the big worrying thing is the cost of it, the cost of building nuclear power stations, of operating them, of dealing with the waste is a worry. And we know that in this country, when we have these massive building projects, such as we experienced with Medupi and Kusile coal power stations, we're told at the beginning that the budget is 80 billion rands, and the next thing you know, they spent 250 billion rands, and it's taken 10 years longer. Now, we're told that it'll cost 400 billion rands to build a nuclear power station, a new one, up the road from Kuburg, on the same stretch of coast north of Cape Town. 400 billion, but we immediately think, well, that's not going to be the case. It'll end up costing double, and it'll take more than 10 years to build. And in those 10 years, our advances in renewable energy, in other words, solar energy and wind energy, are going to be enormous. The technical advances are taking place all the time. It could well be that 10 or 12 years from now, when we are ready to switch on a new nuclear power station, we simply won't need it, because we will have so much wind and solar energy and so much battery storage to see us through the windless and sunless periods, that we will have spent maybe, 800 billion rands on something that we don't need. So it's something that people should keep an eye on, and, wherever you can express your opinion, educate yourself about it and make your feelings known. I think it's a very risky proposition.
A risky proposition, and of course, if you'd like to hear more and see more of what CPLO does in its work, it's cplo.org.za. Anything else I could, Mike?
Very briefly, just another risky proposition. The Independent Electoral Commission is exploring the possibility of moving towards electronic voting in our future elections, and they have a document out for public comment. The deadline for comment is tomorrow, so we will be putting in a comment on that. And I think a lot of people are reacting very cautiously to the idea of electronic voting in our country for a few reasons. It might exclude people, in rural areas who don't have access to internet and to data and so on. But more particularly, it opens the door for interference, hacking and such like things. It certainly opens the door to people perceiving that elections can be interfered with, whereas our current system, very manual-based, filling in, voting slips at a voting station, is almost impossible to crook. So another risky proposition to keep an eye on.
Well, we will look out for that, and of course, one needs to then make comments and at least say, risky, or yes, I agree, or no, I don't, or maybe, whatever the case is.
Maybe.
in that. Abgad Mike Porthia, thank you very much for speaking to us once again, and we chat again next week. We'll be in the new month of October.
Have a good week.
You have a good one too. God bless.